We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 275. Another day, another podcast in the month of October. I was calling it No Sleep October on Twitter today.
Yeah, no, it's like a steady diet of coffee and anything I can get with caffeine in it. It's pretty much I'm completely fake awake at this point. It's not real. My eyes are and it's only one game.
It's only been one game.
It's only one game.
And then we have
I didn't have this experience with a kid yet, so this is going to be really interesting. I'm pretty much going to be a dead man walking for the entire time they're in the playoffs.
Yes. I was just on the phone with my dad before this, and I when I picked up the phone, he goes, oh, well, at least you sound better than you did on the podcast last night.
Not to mention, technical issues are outstanding, so I hope everybody loved the show yesterday because I was up until 4 freaking a.m. editing that show because for some ungodknown reason, the file kept getting corrupt and wouldn't save like 50 times, and I had to redo it at 3 a.m., finally getting it out at 3:30. So that was awesome.
That's brutal. When I saw like you sent out that message and I saw the timestamp on it, I was like, what the hell happened last night? Is that how late we were up? Because it's not even like I was hungover this morning, but had nothing to do with alcohol and everything to do with screaming at the top of my lungs for 4 straight hours.
Yeah, I felt like I didn't leave my house, and I felt like I got run over by a truck.
And like you said, it's only game one, and we have 5 freaking games with the Red Sox coming up.
Yeah, Yankees-Red Sox playoff games. What are they going to be, 7 hours long?
7-hour, 9-inning games. Yeah. 1,000 pitches thrown, 4 million pitching changes. Yeah. Yeah. It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be excruciating, and we're gonna try and break it all down on this show. But any final wild card thoughts before we get to the ALDS?
You know, I just thought again. I'll reiterate. I had this beforehand. You know, I had confidence going into that game. It felt like they were in a different place this year, and I think they came out and showed that. They came out, you know, the opposite of flat. Like these guys were firing on all cylinders from the get-go, and you could tell. And I think they had a level of importance to jump out early, to get the crowd into it early, especially when you're facing a young team that, you know, could be frozen a little deer in headlights. And I think that's what we saw for a little bit until the A's, you know, finally kind of calmed things down and established the baseline again. But they did their job and they were confident, and then they just kept tacking on runs, and the pitching was good throughout. So just an overall really, really good game. Really good. One thing we didn't really talk about last night, just because, you know, there's so many things we probably missed. But two things that jump out. I know we talked about Boone and how he was really good, and I think we both had really good things to say about him. But something that I don't think we mentioned really much was Gary Sanchez. Gary Sanchez blocking the ball behind the plate was actually very good. He made a lot of good plays behind the dish. And you know, hats off to Sanchez for playing the way he did last night.
Yeah, so he made no impact with his bat, but he did make an impact on the game for the way he caught, blocked the balls, helped Severino through that bases loaded jam, and then helped Betances through that to get out of that jam that he was thrown into. So yeah, really good game for Gary Sanchez last night when he did absolutely nothing with the bat.
No, but you could see, I mean, the
and rapport, I'm saying that as a positive.
I know, but the rapport in the dugout, like these guys were with Betances and Sanchez, I think I mentioned it last night. I can't be held accountable for anything I say. I have no idea.
Memories
what I said,
are out the window at this point.
You could just tell that they had a really good thing going, and they were excited about the way, you know, the pitches and the calls that they made. You could just tell that there was a really good chemistry going on last night. So I think everybody there was just fired up and ready to roll and you know, like unfinished business. And I like that.
Right. And I had a chance this morning because when we did our podcast last night, it was pretty much immediately after I got home. I hadn't watched any highlights or anything like that. I was just talking to you. You kind of filled me in on some things that I may have missed because I was at the stadium. One thing that I don't know how you did not bring up, how the hell did you sit through 9 innings of Dennis Eckersley? He was god-awful.
I said something last night about Eckersley and Darling.
Clearly, yeah. I don't remember. But on the Aaron Judge home run in the first inning, like Dennis Eckersley's exact quote was, oh no, this is a nightmare. Like, are you freaking kidding me, dude? This is a national TV broadcast, AL Wild Card. It was the highest rated playoff game, AL Wild Card game in history. All eyes were on you. If you want to be a homer on Nesson, fine. But don't be a freaking homer on national TV. At least try and be professional. And I don't mind homers. If Eckersley wants to be a homer for the Nesson broadcast, fine. It's Red Sox fans watching. But try and be, don't openly root against the team, even if you are an ex-Oakland A and you are a current Red Sox announcer. I mean, damn, the only, I don't know who was rooting against the Yankees harder last night, David Price or Dennis Eckersley.
I mean, you could throw Ron Darling into that boat too, because
I don't mind
both.
Darling as much though.
Yeah, but a lot of the commentary, there was a lot of commentary that was just, you know, complaining about some of the pitches that were, you know, that they were cheering when Seve didn't get them. You could just tell that there was a bias, and yeah. Whatever. I kind of expected it when I realized who the broadcast was.
A Mets and a Red Sox.
Yeah. So, you know, I kind of tuned it out. Yeah. I mean, I heard it, but nothing was, you know, surprising by any means.
Well, add it to the list of why I was happy I was at the game and not watching on TV, because I would have put my head through my TV if I was listening to Eckersley. And the other thing is that video that went viral today of the Oakland A's fan getting a beer just dumped all over him in the bleachers. I don't condone that sort of behavior. But if you're going and sitting out with the bleacher creatures in an Oakland A's jersey with, was it frosted tips or just gray hair, or was it dyed bleach
blonde?
No, he
had green hair. He had dyed his green hair.
Awesome. Yeah. Of course you're going to get a beer dumped on you, dude. I don't condone it, but you got to expect that.
I mean, I'm not expecting a full beer to get dumped on me. And let's all be honest. If I'm going somewhere, if I'm in an opposing stadium, and I'm wearing my gear and I'm out in the bleachers where it's basically just, you know, a zoo and animals there. It's impossible. You know, those are the hardcore fans. Those are the cheaper seats. It's always been like that. And it's probably like that in most places, but especially there. One, if I get a full beer dumped on me, I'm probably going out on a stretcher, because there's no possible way I'm looking at that guy and not fighting him.
Right. He was very calm. I mean, that was a very California reaction.
Yeah. Have some self-respect and just go and try to beat that guy's ass at least. Just try.
Do something. You got to do something. Yeah. But I guess when you're outnumbered 50,000 to one.
I mean, you got to believe. I can't imagine, like, you know, all those people are just going to start whooping this guy's ass after he gets a beer dumped on him. It's going to get broken up. Try to fight it. Save some face in that situation.
Yeah.
You're already drenched with beer.
Might not be worth going to jail for, though.
But I got to tell you, I would be hot. If some asshole poured a beer on me.
The guy who, and I was joking about that, the guy should have expected it. If you want to wear the opposing team's jersey to a stadium, like, of course, fine. This is sports after all. Like, but the biggest asshole in this scenario is the guy who dumped the beer and filmed it. Just figured we should touch on that. And the last thing I wanted to talk about was the We Want Boston chants that were starting up around the sixth inning. And this segues into the ALDS. This is a turn, right? This is not the normal Yankees Red Sox playoff rivalry where it's the Yankees as the underdog, the Yankees fans chanting, "We want Boston." It's usually been flipped in the history of these two teams.
Yeah, no, I know. They're the team that won the division. Obviously, the Yankees have not been able to overcome the Red Sox in the past couple of years for the division. And, you know, they're the team that won the most games in baseball. They were on a, you know, historic run and ended a little short of one of the most winning teams in the regular season. But, and their payroll is what, $50 million higher? That's something that
total role reversal.
Yeah. So there's a big double standard here when I think back to all my buddies yelling and screaming at me when I was in college and afterwards that are Red Sox fans about payroll. It's totally flipped, and they are the favorite. There's no doubt about it. So.
And all the pressure's on them because they're the ones who have been choking in the playoffs the last few years. Yeah, they've been raising those AL East banner divisions, and they have 108 wins in the regular season, but right now it's 0-0. And the facts are that the Red Sox have a 1-6 record in the last two postseasons.
Yeah, and that's a big deal. I think that's one of the they have an monkey on their back. And when you look at what the Yankees did last year, they're coming in full steam. They're coming in with, like I said earlier, unfinished business, because I think that's kind of what their you know, what their theme is at this point. I mean, you heard Boone in the postgame little celebration when they started, you know, pouring booze all over each other. Was we're just getting started, and I think that is certainly their mentality. They know what they were last year, and they're a better team this year. They have upgraded many of the positions, so there's no reason why they can't make a deep run. And I think this team is really starting to believe that.
And it's the earliest that 100 win teams have met in the playoffs in history. The last time it happened was 1977, and it was the Royals against the Yankees in the ALCS. There was no division series at that point. But you don't normally see 100-win teams meeting up this early in the playoffs. It happened because they're in the same division, and also because they're in the same division, they've seen each other a million times. They know each other inside and out. I mean, we have these stats here to break it down, pitcher versus batter matchup and all this stuff, and it's gigantic sample sizes. Normally, yeah. It's like, okay, well, what am I going to do with a 1-for-6? That doesn't really mean anything. But there's a lot of history here with these teams, and they're pretty much the same teams from last year too, with the exceptions of Martinez for the Red Sox and Stanton for the Yankees. The lineups are very much the same.
And it's good that they've had this, you know, they've had this time to get acquainted. We've had a nice little skirmish under our belt as well. So there's a lot of things brewing, and this is something that, as fans, you know, we've been asking for this, and like we've needed this for a long time.
14
years. This rivalry to get back into the playoffs, because that is where the hatred starts.
Yes.
Again, that's where the hatred is fueled. You can start a little bit of it in the regular season, like that gets some sparks going.
They did.
But the full on flame is in the playoffs when it's win or go home.
The fact that Tyler Austin is now a Minnesota Twin, does that take any sort of the brawl aspect out of it, because one of the main guys in that brawl is no longer on the roster?
No, I don't think so at all. I still think there's a, you know, there's Joe Kelly still there. There's an entire team of Yankees who have Tyler Austin's back, who are still good buddies with him. I still think
win this one for Tyler Austin. I'm kidding. That would be a hilarious thing.
didn't Scranton, or not Scranton, didn't Pawtucket do some stupid giveaway?
Yeah, anybody
or some
with
promotion?
The name of Tyler or Austin was not allowed into one of their games.
Yeah, so the organization got personal here. Let's shove it back in their face. Pawtucket Red Sox,
hometown in Rhode or home state of Rhode Island.
Yeah, got personal. They took it there. But no, I mean, I do think that's a consideration. That guy's been a teammate of theirs for years. So a lot of these guys,
true,
and they all saw that as a slight. And you know, I still think that there's that blood is there. These are the two most competitive teams in the division. Obviously, they've been going at it for a while now, and they know that there's something lurking. It's always on the, you know, just under the surface, ready to explode.
All right, let's talk about a couple of high-level factors for this series. So the biggest thing, I think, one of the biggest things is home field advantage, because the Yankees are 7-0 in the last two postseasons at home in the Bronx, and they outscore opponents a total of 42-14. That is utter annihilation when the Yankees are playing in the Bronx.
Yeah, they have such a level of comfort when they're there, and they have to take advantage of it. I think when we're talking about these home field advantages, I think both teams are probably putting, you know, the highest of priority on defending. here's your shirt, defending the Bronx and defending Fenway.
I guess it applies now. Finally,
yeah, it does. Because the home field advantage is so large. If you can steal a game somewhere, then you know it's a big deal. So yeah, they got to continue this home field. They got to continue scoring a billion runs at home. Because it's intimidating, I think, when other teams come in.
Against each other this year in 2018, the Yankees score 6 runs a game at home and only 4.5 games at Fenway, whereas the Red Sox score 7.5 runs at Fenway and only 4.5 runs at Yankee Stadium. The numbers are pretty drastic when you look at the home and road splits here, and that's why those 3 games at Fenway Park are going to be absolutely excruciating. I know this sounds stupid because it's only a 5-game series. But if you could win one of those first two, I really could see it not even going back to Fenway Park.
Yeah, no, I mean, I kind of agree. The You could tell the reason I think there's such a big advantage at home for these two teams, obviously, is the Yankees have their short porch in right field, and the Yankees have, you know, for lack of a better reason, tailored their swings. They know how to swing differently when they're at home. Aaron Judge certainly swings differently. The guy is, you know, his road home splits are insane, how heavily weighted, how good he is at home. They know how to take advantage of the stadium, and the Red Sox are exactly the same way when they're at home. They know how to take advantage of that monster wall in left field that's high but extremely short. They know how to play pepper off of it. They know they just got to get the ball up in the air. So I think both teams have the experience, and they know damn well how to take advantage of each other's home parks.
And the Red Sox this year, it's like a new trend for the Red Sox with Alex Cora. They're extremely aggressive on the base paths. And in Fenway Park, you get weird-ass bounces, caroms off the wall, pesky pull. Like, they're just flying around the bases. They steal bases. And the Yankees' defense, we even saw it in that last game of the season. The outfielders, like Brett Gardner, made a weird play off the wall. Aaron Judge misplayed a ball in right field. And the Red Sox just out there running around the bases, taking extra bases. So that's another factor is, are the Red Sox going to be aggressive? And is that going to hurt the Yankees defensively?
Well, I mean, you could bet your ass that they're going to be aggressive. There's no doubt about it. Cora's shown that that's kind of the makeup of this team right now. I mean, they've hit a lot more home runs than they did last year. They were a weird team last year when they didn't have a thumper in the middle of that
bottom
lineup.
Three in homers, which is not normal for the Red Sox.
It was so strange. And then you add, you know, one guy in J.D. Martinez that makes just a world of difference and makes an entire lineup better, but is thumping all by himself as well. It definitely changes the makeup of the team. But, you know, you and I were talking about this before we started recording. You know, the makeup of the team, while both teams are extremely talented, the Red Sox play differently. They make a lot more contact. They can take advantage of running the bases. They have a lot of speed in the outfield. Their outfielders are fast as hell. They have a lot of other guys who can run well. So, I fully expect them to try to take advantage of every opportunity.
Yeah, you remember those numbers we talked about with how good the Red Sox are with runners in scoring position? It's because they make contact. They don't strike out in big spots. And in the playoffs, that's really difficult to pitch against.
Yeah, no, that's and I think that's the biggest difference when you're looking at these two teams. You know, I would make the argument that 1-9, the Yankees are more talented, and you know, position by position, they're better.
And they can all hit home runs. Everyone up and down the lineup, we know 20 home runs out of every spot in the order.
Yeah, everybody can do damage, but you are going to get more strikeouts. And whereas the Red Sox, you may have some of these guys that, the Leones of the world, who aren't going to,
at bat. They're going to give the pitcher a tough at bat.
Yeah, but you're looking at that guy and you're like, all right, this guy is you know, a replacement level type guy. He's not that, but he makes a ton of contact. He knows how to take advantage of Fenway Park, and he's tough there.
And it's the guys like Steve Pierce and Eduardo Nunez, like these little pesky motherfuckers that make contact and just make the lineup more difficult to pitch to. I mean, Steve Pierce's
numbers. I can't even call Steve Pierce pesky.
Okay, whatever he is, he's a thumper against the Yankees. He's 5 home runs against the Yankees this year, just as a member of the Red Sox. And he only has 7 total against the Red Sox. 5 home runs and 43 plate appearances. He has demolished the Yankees pitching.
Yeah, 3 home run game. He hit, that grand slam off of Jay Happ. You know, that's going to be in his wheelhouse and in his mind right off the bat. So those are guys that you have to look out for. And Steve Pierce has crushed the Yankees in every single team in the American League East. This guy has just been a nightmare for the Yankees wherever he is, until he did play for the Yankees and he was terrible. So thanks, Steve. Appreciate that. I think he's just a freaking... I don't know where he grew up or where he's from, but he obviously has an affinity for hating the Yankees.
And it's like we've mentioned all these guys and haven't even really got to J.D. Martinez and Mookie Betts and Benintendi, who kills the Yankees, and Xander Bogaerts, who had a 40-plus double season, 100-plus RBI season.
Yeah, no, I mean, when you talk about the top talent of their lineup, it's extremely good. J.D. Martinez, obviously, we all know, had probably one of his best seasons, if not his best season. The guy was ridiculous. And just he doesn't make bad contact. You know, he makes a lot of really good contact, and it's consistent. So he is he's been just doing absolute damage. When you're looking at how the Yankees match up, if you're talking about like bullpen arms and starting pitching too, it does work to their advantage on the sense that they have, you know, some dominant right-handed guys that can hopefully counteract. But there's no big lefty the Red Sox are trotting out there this time. There's no big Ortiz. So
right.
Having a lefty specialist like the old days where you have, you know, the, you have each team has a lefty specialist that comes in and tries to hold the big lefty hitter on the other opposing team. That's no more.
Right, because both teams are right-handed. You got Benintendi for the Red Sox and Didi for the Yankees. Those are really the only guys. Everybody else is switch hitting or is a big right-handed hitter.
Yeah, so I'm okay with that. I'm glad that we don't have the lefty specialists that come in and pitch to one guy and then we're done and they got to take up a roster spot for that. That is an annoying roster spot.
But I think another key to this game, and this is the part I think when we talk about it starts favoring the Yankees, is the bullpens. And if the Yankees can make this a bullpen series, I have confidence they can win.
There's no doubt about it. Their bullpen is far superior. And they have to, but you know, again, to make sure that they are staying effective in the bullpen, the starters have to do their job and get some length, because if they are going early to the bullpen, then you're basically taking your strength and you're drastically weakening it by overpitching them. And once you do that, you know, then it's anybody's game. Well, but if you do on the other side, on the flip side, if the Yankees are able to get to the Red Sox bullpen,
yeah,
I mean, there's just no talent there.
Right. The Red Sox need their big three starters, Price, Porcello, and Sale, to go 6+. And if that doesn't happen, the Red Sox are not going to win. And whereas the Yankees, I think they can get away with their starters just going, like last night, 4+. Get us at least into the fifth inning. Because and then you have off days after game two and after game four, where you can kind of let the bullpen do a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yeah, no, that's true. 4 to 5.
I know, but I think like, that's all they're going to ask for. Like,
I guess
that's really all they're going to ask for is get us 5 innings, and we're comfortable with that.
When you have a guy like Jay Happ who has, you know, a sub 2 ERA against the Red Sox and has been so good against them for you know with every team he's been on, basically. You want more than 4 to 5 innings. Like that, when a guy is coming over,
okay,
I want to see a little bit more than that so that we can save this bullpen for, you know, a possible Tanaka start who has struggled mightily against this team.
Yep.
I don't want to waste bullets on early. I still think it's a huge advantage if the Yankees starters can get into that. I think sixth inning is like the magic number.
Of course that's the magic number. All season when the Yankees starters get into the sixth inning, the Yankees are almost unbeatable. So now you're expecting them to go do that against the best lineup?
No, I'm talking about game one, specifically Jay Happ.
Specifically game one. Happ has been tremendous with the Yankees and Blue Jays this season, 22 2/3 innings, a .198 batting average against, 29 strikeouts, 6 walks, 2 homers allowed, a .199 ERA. And he has not had an ERA above .233 against the Red Sox since the 2014 season.
If Jay Happ can give you some length into this and keep this game close,
yep,
and he gets into the sixth inning and the Yankees are able to pull out something because Jay Happ is dominating this team and goes deep into it. You know, I mean, talk about a ridiculous advantage. Not only are you stealing one at Fenway, but now you also have a starter who has done the majority of the work. I mean, that's a humongous advantage for the Yankees for the rest of the series.
If the Yankees win game one, what is David Price going to do? Is he going to come up with a hurt wrist? Is he going to say he's got the flu? Because he is going to absolutely be trembling. He might vomit right there on the mound. David Price in basically a must-win situation against the Yankees? Good luck, Boston.
I mean, he's going to call his buddy, his good buddy, Sonny, for some advice.
Yes, Sonny. You know? Sonny, how do you deal with tough times? Well, I just go tell the media that my stuff is really good, and I go watch Peaky Blinders.
I mean, that's it. You know, it's a good game plan. Try to be as unprepared as possible.
Try to be as unprepared as possible. Yeah,
as unprepared. Yeah, and don't have any type of semblance of a routine, and then just hope things will go well.
But the Red Sox bullpen, like Joe Kelly, Matt Barnes, Hector Velazquez, these guys do not scare me. Kimbrel scares me. He's a good closer, but that seventh and eighth inning is not good for the Red Sox. So it's going to be, if it's a bullpen series, I'm feeling good. Probable pitching matchups. We already have announced Happ against Sale in game one. No one has been announced for the Yankees in game two. It's got to be Tanaka. I don't see what else they could possibly do. This is lining up. It lined up with Severino starting in the wildcard game, lined up perfectly for this series where you can go Happ, Tanaka, and then Severino back at home. So Tanaka against Price in game two, Severino against Porcello in game three, and then we'll see where we are game four.
Yeah, the game four, it'll be, we know what we have lined up through the weekend. I think you're right. I think Tanaka I mean, when you look at the road splits between the road home splits for Tanaka and Severino, obviously Severino, we know from last show and what he's done at home. You know, we've gone through all those numbers where how dominant Severino and how much better he is at home. Tanaka's had a tremendous year this year on the road. So, you know, putting him in both situations where they can hopefully succeed is a big deal. And I don't know how they could possibly line it up any differently.
But Tanaka against the Red Sox this year in 19 innings has a 7.58 ERA.
That's a big deal. You know, at least you're not putting it in Yankee Stadium, where I think he's definitely struggled, especially the home run ball is something that, you know, that comes out. Not to say that you can't hit it out of Fenway, but I don't know. I think taking him away where he does have better numbers on the road is at least putting him in a situation that's better. Like, he struggled against his team no matter where he is. So he's just got to pitch better. How about that?
Well, it's actually interesting because Tanaka on paper should match up well against the Red Sox because he prefers to throw his slider and his splitter, and the Red Sox eat fastballs alive. That's one of the reasons they hit Chapman. They have the second highest WOBA as a team against fastballs of 95 miles an hour or above.
The second
weighted on base at weighted on base average, basically just how much damage you're doing, how many times you're getting on base against a pitch. They get on base against fastballs, which is another reason I don't conceptually understand how J-Hap pitches well against the Red Sox. He's a left-handed pitcher who predominantly throws four-seam fastballs, and he somehow can beat that right-handed Red Sox lineup. It doesn't make any sense. I feel like the Rain Man gif with the numbers flying around trying to figure out how this is happening.
I mean, he does throw the four-seam fastball, but he's also, you know, he's crafty. He sneaks in off-speed pitches, and I feel like he keeps these guys on their toes and for whatever reason just keeps them off balance. And you're right. They eat fastballs for you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I think maybe that's why we saw some struggles with Tanaka. When Tanaka's wasn't going well, he was, you know, relying too little on the fastball, I think, and he was becoming predictable. And he wasn't showing you know, the hard stuff down that looks like a fastball coming in. I think if he could come out and establish the bottom of that zone, he'll be more effective because then he can mix in the fastball, you know, with some of his heavier breaking stuff that breaks down in the zone. And then you got these guys, you know, off balance or swinging through breaking balls thinking they're fastballs. So I think it's extremely effective for him. One, I think when we're looking at the umpire and how the strike zone is, if he's not getting the bottom of that zone, he's in trouble.
Yeah, like, so again, another thing I noticed from the wild card game when I watched the condensed game, the umpire had a tight strike zone. And if it's something like that for Tanaka, that's going to be difficult against the Red Sox.
Yeah, because he starts elevating pitches at that point, and that's when you start seeing balls fly out of the ballpark for him. If he starts elevating whatever the pitch is, if it's the fastball, if it's the breaking ball, especially the breaking ball, if he's not getting anything low in the zone with the fastball, then the breaking ball becomes that much less effective because they can just spit on it. Because a lot of the times it starts either in the bottom of the zone or, you know, just out. And it looks like a fastball coming out of his hand and then dies. So that pitch is almost, you know, it's basically taken away from his arsenal if he's not getting those calls. But that's his deal to take it, to make those adjustments. But it'll be interesting because he's definitely pitched, I think, you know, obviously in the second half, we've seen him pitch much better and work the pitches a lot, you know, mix in the pitches a lot more than he did early on.
Yeah, we felt great about Tanaka 2 weeks ago. It's just he didn't really finish the season very strong.
Right.
And so the last thing
you got to hope that he just relies on the, you know, the main second half tonight.
Been a while since he pitched. The last time he pitched was in Tampa, correct?
Yeah, I think so. He's been off for a while. So he's ready to go.
It's going to be, can we just fly in like Yu Darvish?
Ichiro?
No, we should just fly in Shohei Ohtani and just pencil him in as the starting pitcher and see what Tanaka does.
Why don't the Yankees just invite Ichiro to the game? I think that's all it takes, honestly.
But Ichiro is a friend. He's an ex-teammate.
Yeah,
actually, was he there? Was he there? Was Ichiro? God, I'm getting my years mixed up.
No, yeah. but he wants to do well in front of him. He's not going to pitch horribly in front of Ichiro. Ichiro's a legend. He's a national hero.
Yeah, okay.
Fly him in. He's a Yankee.
Can we just get a fat head of him?
The real thing.
Poster board cutout.
Bring in non-English speaking Ichiro.
You and I, we go to Fenway Park. We make some fat heads of Ichiro and Ohtani and Yu Darvish and all the other Hideki Irabu and just all the
we just have we have a whole row of every good Japanese player that's ever been.
We buy out the front row of the monster seats and just fill them with fat heads of Japanese stars.
Yeah, no, I like that.
Tanaka,
like that
perfect game. Remember, he did pitch the complete game shutout at Fenway, so it can happen. Yes.
And we've seen, look, we have a, the last time we saw Tanaka in the postseason, he was very good.
That's true.
This is a guy that gets up for these types of situations. That's why I think having him at Fenway is good, because, you know, his numbers on the road, I think one of the reasons he's effective on the road is because he doesn't get clam up in big situations like this at other people's ballparks. You know, it doesn't matter to him. I think honestly, he gets more worked up when he's at home,
because he's probably more concerned about the home run ball.
Yeah, definitely.
Game four, if there is a game four, unless one of these teams sweep, I could see the Yankees going to CeCe for one time through the order, as we've said before. It's kind of an opener situation, even though it's a traditional starting pitcher with CeCe. And then the Red Sox probably are going to go with Eovaldi, who has had very good success against the Yankees this season.
Yeah, I think CeCe would probably be the guy, unless they did, you know, do a whole bullpen thing, which I really hope they don't, because, you know, one, they just need to make sure that there's somebody on the roster that's going to be taking that spot, obviously. But the, who knows? This is why I can't stand the bullpen thing. Like, to me, this is where it all goes shit out the window. Like, how are you supposed to prepare for a bullpen game on the third game, like, or fourth game? How are you supposed to do that?
Well,
I don't understand how you prep that.
Because game three, if Severino goes out there and pitches eight innings, then fine. You can go to a bullpen game in game four. But if you're already lining yourself up for a bullpen game in game four, but Severino's out after four or five innings, then what the hell do you do?
That's my point. It's you can't plan these things. That's why I don't think it's not sustainable in the playoffs.
It's interesting because I don't know if you were watching that Brewers game today. They went bullpen game one.
Yeah, I have it on right now. I didn't see the beginning of the game, but who did they start? They started it was a bullpen
I don't remember who it was.
This whole trend is pissing me off. I'm not going to lie. It's really, it's annoying as hell. I needed to die like a horrible flaming death. And I feel like we saw a little bit of that maybe in Oakland, but then, you know, the Trevino kid came.
Yeah, I mean, it's just Hendricks stunk and Rodney stunk. Everyone else was pretty decent for him.
Yeah.
They went Woodruff, and he went three innings. And then...
what did I say? All it takes is one or two guys, one or two chinks in that armor when you're trying to, you know, throw out six, seven guys in a bullpen game. They better all be good, every single one of them, because if you have a couple guys, and we saw that last night, the opener, quote opener, I hate that word, it's actually getting worse now to me as this whole thing goes on. I'm starting to hate it way more now.
We got to get Brian Kenny back on the podcast.
Yeah, it's just really starting to piss me off. But, you know, I mean, Aaron Judge took advantage of it in the very beginning. You know, one guy, and that was the difference in the game.
So the roster, as we're recording this on, what day is it? Thursday?
I think it's Thursday.
Yeah, so no ALDS roster has been announced, but we pretty much know who's going to be there. I think Higgy's going to be off, CeCe will be on, and then it'll be interesting to see if they keep Wade on for pinch running and defense, or if they take Wade off and put a bullpen arm like Tarpley on.
Yeah, because when you're looking at it, Tarpley would be the guy, I guess, because, you know, I don't know how much confidence they got from him, or they have in him now after he ended the season, you know, much better than where he started.
Apparently he was close to making the wild card roster. He was like the odd man out.
Yeah. Well, and it makes sense because he's a lefty, and that's the big reason.
Versatility.
Having a guy like that.
You need it against the Red Sox.
That's the question. It's so right-handed heavy that you almost don't need. Would you rather have another righty?
Or would you prefer Tyler Wade to pinch run?
See, to me, Tyler Wade is that type of Swiss Army knife that could be very important. Because
he's not going to hit. He's going to play defense.
No, but he can run. He could play a million positions. He could lay down a bunt if you need to in a situation. So, like, we're not going to expect him to go out there and rope a double, but he could do something fundamental. You know, he could be a guy that could sack a guy over.
You know, just
having that guy that can handle a bat in that way and then run the bases and play defense, I think is a good thing to have.
Why didn't he pinch run for Voit when Voit was on third base last night?
Because Luke Voit is a goddamn legend.
But no, seriously, what's the point of Tyler Wade on that roster? I just thought of this. If you have Tyler Wade there, it's already a 5-0 game, right? It was a 5-0 game at that point. runner on third base, one out. You were looking for a sac fly, and Voit may have been out. I mean, the challenge went the Yankees' way, but he was pretty close to being out. Tyler Wade is in there standing up.
Yeah. I don't know.
And then Neil Walker, but Neil Walker went in anyway.
Right. Yeah. Maybe a missed opportunity.
No, Amy, of course, it sounds stupid. I'm not second-guessing Boone, but what I'm saying is there's no point. If that's not the situation to pinch run him, when is?
Well, I mean, I you know, in a series, it's different. You're gonna have multiple situations, you know, probably where he could come into advantage.
Yeah.
So I still think it's a you know, a positive thing to have him on there. I would prefer to have him on there than a guy like Tarpley. If it's between the two, not a guy like Tarpley. If it's Wade or Tarpley, I want Wade.
What about Sonny Gray?
I certainly don't want Sonny. I don't even want Sonny Gray to be there, honestly. Like I don't want him to make the trip.
He was booed in pregame introductions last night. Him and Bird were both booed.
Good. they both deserve it.
Biggest ovation who was not on the roster was CeCe.
Of course.
Yeah.
Everybody loves CeCe. I mean, how could you not, especially after what he just did?
Yeah, that's
in Tampa. So, I mean, he's like the he could do no wrong right now. Well, he could do a lot wrong if he pitches.
So one big thing I think for Stanton was getting that home run. He popped his playoff cherry, and he's had a very good season against the Red Sox. 371 average, 5 homers, 17 RBIs, and 12 extra base hits. So he has hit the Red Sox this year, and now he has that first hit in the playoffs out of the way, and he can just concentrate on beating the crap out of Chris Sale on Friday night.
Yeah, I love it. I'm so happy that he got that home run, and it was just to get it out of the way. And the numbers that he has against the Red Sox, I mean, he's done stupid damage against the Red Sox. So he needs to continue it. I mean, look, we saw what he was doing towards the end of the season. He was heating up, and it looks like that's really continuing. Like, this guy really might be in the middle of one of his hot streaks, and that's,
good
you know,
news.
Very good news.
So, Tyler was pulling some stats here, and one thing that kind of jumps out at me is Didi's numbers against the Red Sox. 164 batting average, 2 homers, 9 runs driven in, 7 strikeouts in 75 plate appearances. That 164 batting average really jumps out.
I wonder how many of those were in the middle of his, you know, god-awful slump.
In May?
Yeah.
Did they play?
I'm wondering if they played during that streak, because that would make some sense for these numbers to get skewed.
I know
and then he was injured.
He hit his home runs. Didn't he hit one of the home runs in that game we saw in the Bronx off the Red Sox? That
maybe.
Was a long ass time ago.
It was the end of June
at that point. But
setting me up for failure right there. I have no idea. I think he did actually hit a home run now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. So are you at all concerned with Aroldis Chapman closing against the Red Sox?
I know that he doesn't have good numbers, so he's got bad numbers.
They're not,
in fact.
They're not just not good, they're really bad. 17 innings pitched, 16 hits, 16 walks, which is just throw up in my mouth a little bit. 7.41 ERA.
Yeah, the walks is what's killing you. And the fact that he's had one positive outing, and it was with the Reds.
His last outing against the Red Sox actually was good last weekend at Fenway Park. He cleaned up a mess from the Yankees, got out of the inning.
In a game that didn't matter for the Red Sox.
A game that didn't matter to the Yankees either. They'd already clinched. It's
for any team.
They were trying to get to 100 wins. That's literally the only thing that they were going for at that point. But it's been ugly. Really, the thing that sticks out to you is that Sunday night game back in August.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's hard to forget that one. The problem I have with him. So you asked me if I'm nervous. Yeah, I'm nervous about it. I'm gonna be like wound up as tight as you could possibly be if he gets into the game in a tight situation at Fenway Park. Like, he's gonna be sweating bullets. You know that.
It'll be 40 degrees outside.
It'll be 40 degrees. He's gonna be sweating his face off, not be able to grab the ball. And you know, if he starts walking guys, the thing with him is if he doesn't find that strike zone, a lot of times he never finds it. Like, it doesn't come back. You know, so. He's got to be on from the get go, I think, and it's a house of horrors for him there. So yeah, it makes me nervous. I think that I certainly think that he's going to get the closer role, you know, off the bat. But if he struggles in that first game, if there's that first opportunity, I would not be surprised if they went to Britain.
The kind of tricky thing about this is Chapman and Britton are both kind of making me nervous right now. Betances has been pitching the best, but he makes me nervous in the ninth inning. You're saying Betances in the seventh or the eighth inning against the Red Sox? I'm totally fine with it. But for whatever reason, it seems like Betances gets in the ninth inning and something happens in his brain. Like some wires start to short circuit.
But that was one of those stats and thoughts that we've had, and then we looked at the numbers, and his numbers in the ninth are actually not very different.
Yeah, same
from what
same
they
thing
were.
With his numbers with runners on base. Yeah, yes. Eventually, eye test, baby.
But we remember home runs and you losing the game. That's what's remembered really. But
yes.
I don't know, man. After what I saw from Betances last night, I mean,
star of the game. I said it last night, but he was absolutely the star of the game.
You want to talk about sacking up? Like that dude came and was so good. I do not remember a time where I've seen him pitch as big as he did then in that situation, and so freaking animated. I loved that. I love the fact that he was just all in, and you could tell. And he pitched lights out. So we know what he is when he's on. When he's the guy that he showed last night. I mean, he's one of the most dominant pitchers in baseball, not in the American League, in baseball. He's got that kind of stuff. So if his head's right, then I'm good throwing him anytime.
There was a really good article in FanGraphs about Betances today. It was kind of breaking down his mechanics, comparing it to last year when he was super wild. This year he's been a lot more in control. His walks are down. His strikeouts are up. So I encourage you to go check it out.
Yeah. And that's big when you have a big body guy like that, right? Like yeah. That's one of the bigger things is if you can find those mechanics, if you can lock them down and he finds those consistent spots in his rotation, in his windup and in his delivery, that's huge. And if he has found those spots, and he's, you know, able to repeat and repeat, I mean, that's definitely a good equation. For
the
success.
Biggest noticeable difference as far as what it looks like is his leg kick is smaller.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's good. And what that does also is that means he's a bit shorter to home too.
Mm-hmm.
So
which is
probably
also a
keeps
big
the
issue
runners huge issue. It's been a huge issue. Like we said, the two issues last night that you circle with Betances were are runners on and
multi-inning.
And then second inning. Yeah. Another inning. And he dominated both of those.
Both with flying colors. All right, last thing I want to talk about, and this has to be weighing on not only these players, but also Red Sox fans. Chris Sale, career in the postseason, 9 2/3 innings, 8.38 ERA. David Price in the playoffs, 73 1/3 innings, 5.03 ERA. Ricky Rick Porcello, 24 2/3 innings, 5.47 ERA. Those are some balloon size ERAs.
Yeah, you got to be thinking about that. There was some. Did you see there was a video I saw on Twitter?
Yeah,
I really could not understand what the guy said.
His ass off.
Yeah, no. Of the it was a Chris Sale press conference asking him about
that.
His success with the Yankees. He says, "Can you describe your how you've had success with the Yankees?" And he just says, "No."
Chris Sale said anything. No.
Yeah, Chris Sale.
Like he
said
didn't want to
no.
answer the question, or he can't explain it.
Didn't want to answer the question.
Okay. So they're a little nervous. Yeah, a little bit nervous. They
something in the head. There's definitely something in the head over there. And when you look at those numbers, it's hard to ignore.
Yeah. So, like we said at the top, the pressure's on the Red Sox. They're the best team in baseball this year. The record proves it. And they are built to win right now. We've talked to Chad Jennings a million times about how this team... This Red Sox team has to win a World Series or else everything Dave Dombrowski has done is for nothing.
They're top heavy. They're top heavy in the major leagues. The farm is definitely not there. You could see what they even when they tried to secure, you know, more help, they did not shore up the bullpen at the trade deadline. That was one of the areas you'd think that they were targeting, but they just don't have the pieces to make any deals. So that was a big, big hindrance for this team, in the middle of the season to make their team better. They couldn't do it. Nathan Eovaldi was their big pickup.
He's been great against the Yankees. Probably going to get a game 4 postseason start. So we'll see how that goes. All right, you were very confident with the wild card game going into that. What's your level of confidence entering the ALDS?
I feel good. I don't have the same level of, certainty. But I feel good. I feel good because this team is playing well right now. And that's the biggest thing. We all know what happens in October in postseason baseball. The hot team you know, is that's one of the biggest advantages, being that hot team coming into the playoffs. And honestly, the Yankees are acting like that team right now, and it's a good thing. Everybody looks like they have confidence. They look like they're having fun. They're hitting the ball. They're pitching. You know, you got to feel good.
I think that it certainly the Red Sox are the favorites, but it's about as good of a situation you can ask for if you're the Yankees of going up against a 108 win team.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Milwaukee Brewers right now are absolutely blowing it in the ninth inning.
Hader? Is Hader closing?
No, he was in the seventh, actually. Huh. The shortstop just literally a ball went under his glove. A slow charging under his glove.
This is riveting for our listeners who already know what happened.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. So again, you guys know the deal. We're doing episodes after every single game. So the next time we will talk to you is Sunday.
What are you talking about?
Saturday. Tomorrow. Saturday morning. The episode will be out.
Yes.
I tell you, man, the days are all blurring together. I don't know what day it is. I don't know up and down. I don't know left and right.
Yeah. No, it's only after
one game. All right, call the voicemail line as well after the Yankees hopefully kick the crap out of Chris Sale. 646-480-0342. I'll give you the last words.
Thank you. The voicemails were on freaking fire last night. Like, after, I love this. After the all the emotion in the game, call it in the middle of the game, after whatever. And we tried to get as many. I think we had 15 minutes of voicemails.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Tyler was putting them together. It was 35 voicemails, something like that. Some of them we couldn't use because of the sound quality. It just wasn't there. But the it was good. It was good stuff. So keep it rolling. Put it in your phone and call when emotions are at their highest, because that's what makes it good.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.